Welcome back to Zillennials Podcast. Today on Zillennials, we have a guest with us, so please welcome back Ruthika.
Back again. Is this the third time? Third time's the charm.
I think so. We're going to be talking about Fourth Wing today and giving you a little bit of an update on what we thought of the book, especially because I think by the time we release this, I believe the second book in the series will be out. So, Leanne, did you want to start us off with a little bit about the author?
Rebecca Yarras is the author, and she lives out in... Why you all look so concerned?
Oh, no, I'm looking at the cat photos. Sorry.
Oh, I was like, did I mute?
I'm looking at photos of chinchillas because I'm on Rebecca Yarras' bio page.
This is so chaotic already. Yes. As Ruhika says, she does have chinchillas, a cat named Artemis, got some bulldogs, and also six children. So that is what she's doing in her non-writey life. And I think from when I looked her up before, she has written a lot of books already, but they seem to be mostly in the romance genre. From my brief look at it, it seems specifically a lot of like military romance. I feel like it's her wheelhouse, which I think kind of ties into Fourth Wing, seeing as it takes place at a war college.
I think it says she's they're a military family. So I think that's her little niche. She knows what it is.
Kaylee, do you want to share your boyfriend's thoughts?
Yeah. So my boyfriend, he was in the military for a period of time. And I was like, hey, you should really listen to this book with me. Like, we can audiobook it and then we can just listen to it while we're cooking because I've heard that it's such a good book. And so we started listening to it together. But then I think I got to a point where I just wanted to keep going. And he was like, I think I'm good. But for the first hour or so into the book, she keeps using the term rucksack. And he was like, this lady thinks she knows about war, but she doesn't know about war because she's using the term rucksack. Like, he was all up in arms about it. And I was like, it's not that serious, man. Like, it's okay. He was like, the only people who use the term rucksack are in the military. Why is she using the term rucksack? And why is it so constant? It's not a backpack. It's a rucksack.
I think rucksack is a common word, I feel like. I didn't realize it was military specific.
I didn't either. I was like, I thought it was like kind of normal. And he was like, no, I think that she's trying to write this like it's a military book. So it kind of made me giggle. Then, like, later going and learning about her backstory where I was like, oh, it makes sense. She's married to somebody in the military. Huh.
To be fair, I don't think I've ever heard somebody actually use the word rucksack.
I don't think I had either.
I think I read it a lot in books. Maybe they all have a military background, but I almost like, I don't see it as a military thing, but I'm also not, I have no experience in the military, but I see it almost like as like a kind of like a folksy way to describe a backpack. Like if it's especially like medieval fantasy or something, you know what I mean? Like you're not calling it a backpack. You're like, let me put my sword and my shield and my potions and my rucksack as I go on my journey kind of thing.
I could see that where it's definitely more of like a less, I feel like backpack reads too modern and some things like that. You know what I mean? So I feel like rucksack makes more sense.
I Googled the origins of the word rucksack because I just know. Oh, gosh. I didn't realize that the Google was set up. And I guess if you say you're going to G-O-O-G-L-E something, Google Home just kind of speaks through the house. But apparently it's a German word originating from when the German army used rucksack, and then the British started using knapsack.
Oh, maybe if she used the term rucksack, or not rucksack, wow, my mind is one track. And maybe if she used the term knapsack, maybe then it would have bothered him less. I don't know, but
yeah, but that makes me think of Dora the Explorer. Even though she says backpack, I'm thinking like little kid in their knapsack.
I feel like knapsack also just seems less rugged compared to a rucksack.
Rucksack gives me outdoorsy vibes.
Oh, okay. Ruck means backpack in German.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's a backpack sack, I guess, is how a rucksack, I don't know. Don't quote me on that. Google has given me mixed opinions and answers on this.
So now that we've established the origins of the rucksack and kind of how that term came about, first off, I feel like it's pretty appropriate for this, but I could see where people might have differing opinions. Do we want to move on to a little bit about the story, or should we move into our favorite characters? What would you guys like to talk about first?
We should probably overview the story. Just, I will say, I feel like we need to forewarn people that there is romance in it, because I think I told you guys this story on the last episode, but I was raving about, like, I finished this book within like 48 hours. I could not put it down. It was so good. But I was raving about it to everybody, like everybody who would ask me about it, including like parents and grandparents and like just people who probably had no business reading a romance or knowing that I did. And yeah, I like got to some scenes in this book and I realized the wrong that I'd done in telling everybody. Cause like, I remember there was this, when I got to that scene, I was sitting in a hammock and I was like reading the book and I just like gasped. And I was like, what have I done? And my husband just kind of like turned to me and was just like, there's some sort of like sex scene or raunchy scene in there, isn't there? And I was like, yep. And he was like, and you just recommended it to my parents, didn't you? And I was like, yep. It was just so, yeah. I think just up top, the book needs a warning, like a little red flag warning. Don't read audiobook with your grandparents, or don't recommend to your in-laws unless they're cool. But yeah.
I think maybe they should have like a spice meter where, like, you know, it's how many chilies is it?
Yeah. How many jalapenos is this book? I'd say it's like a 3. The 3 out of 5? Yeah. Because once you get there, kind of becomes like a court of thorns and roses for a second there. And then it fades away.
Speaking of, I was like debating putting the second book on my Christmas list. And then I was like thinking about it. And then I was like, I don't know that I want to do that. Because then I'm like, what if somebody from my family goes and reads this? Or what if they go and they read the description? They're like, in case the second book is spicy.
Oh, you know it'll be spicy. Their school is, well, I won't get into the book until one of you guys gives an overview. But yeah, I can't imagine that in the throes of war, spice does not occur.
So this book starts off with Violet, who, as Leanne had mentioned, is put into the battle sector, I suppose, where she needs to learn how to battle and ride a dragon. She, while she's there, meets up with her childhood friend, Dane, and slowly starts falling for this wing leader named Zayden, who is like one of the top people in the quadrant, I suppose. She has to endure several different challenges that test her ability to ride a dragon, including things like combat, an obstacle course, etc. And then eventually she is chosen by not one, but two dragons, one of which is like a little baby dragon. She makes enemies along the way, but many people thought that she wouldn't have made it through because she is physically more frail and is more bookish. Afterwards, I don't remember exactly how they got there, but I know that they end up at a front where they end up fighting wyverns, which are characters that are supposed to be from fairy tales, but apparently are quite real and a very real threat to not just them, but the people around them. That is my summary, as succinct as I can make it.
Is there anything someone feels strongly to start with? I feel like there's a lot in here.
Let's just talk about our love of dark academia, because, man, did any of you guys have that dragonology book growing up? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I'm sorry, I'm fighting a kitten.
You're okay. Aw, she really wants that microphone.
Oh, no. I'm sorry for this complete sidetrack.
Oh, it's okay. Chaos is a theme in this book, so it's good that it's in the podcast episode. No, I was just saying, so like, I think I was reading kind of like the reviews of this book, and obviously like this book is in the realm of A Court in Thorns and Roses, but like kind of like a step above, oh, what was that book? The Graduate series. What was it? It was like, do you know what I'm talking about? The Graduate series. Let's look it up. Oh, The Last Graduate. That's what it was. The Last Graduate. So the Naomi Novik books. I don't think The Last Graduate is the first book in the series. I think it's A Deadly Education. That's what it was the first book. But that is also dark academia. And I had read that, the end of that series, right before The Fourth Wing. And so I was in this dark academia mood. And so as soon as I read it, that it was about dragons, I thought of Dragonology, which is this like kid's book. It's a fake book about like dragons, basically. Like it, you know, it's got like fake dragon leather and like where to find dragons and what does a dragon egg look like? Like weird. It was super cool. I remember begging my parents for the book, and they had one about like everything, one of these Dragonology books. It was like this thick leather bound book, and it was super cool. But this is like, I think, the book for everybody that loves dark academia but also grew up with that book or like wanting that book, because it's the perfect combination. I loved everything about this book from the get-go. It's like every part, I know, like it's the book is controversial. Some people really didn't like it, some people did like it, and it had mainly positive reviews but mixed reviews nonetheless. But man, it's a highlight of my 2023 reading year for sure.
I think also throwing it back to reads from when we were younger, it also reminded me of Aragon by Christopher Paolini, which our fourth grade teacher read to us. I don't remember much about it, except Aragon gets like this egg and it hatches into a dragon. He rides the dragons. There's fights between like the good and bad guys and the dragons. So it was also giving me that kind of vibe, which I was loving. I think there's something about the whole power of nostalgia thing.
Yeah. Man, I'm thinking about it now. Maybe it's like fashion trends, right? Like book themes kind of come back around swinging. Like there was the vampire theme, I guess, when like we were growing up, that was like big. I don't know if that's come back, but there was also like a fairy theme, like in children's books for a while there. Like little like kid books and middle grade fiction had a lot of fairy stuff in there. And I feel like those authors or those readers grew up, and then you had The Court of Thorns and Roses and the Cruel Prince series, you know, all about fairies. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, there were those. I remember Aragon. That was a great book series. And I guess kind of like Lord of the Rings, too, if you think about it. Dragons were kind of in there, too, so.
I agree with what you guys are saying, though, where I feel like you take those themes and then you kind of reuse them, and they'll come in and out of style as time goes on. I think that it's always fun to see them come back around, though, because then when you have those books that you did enjoy as a kid, it's kind of like you get to relive them, but in a different way. And I feel like, to some extent, this book kind of reminds me of like if The Hunger Games met Harry Potter.
That's a good analogy.
I could see it.
Because I feel like it's kind of like it's got that school sort of vibe, but then it's also definitely got a lot more of like the dramatic people die kind of thing going on for it.
I also see like a little bit of that Divergent series in there with the quadrants, like the scribe quadrant and like the writers and stuff. I'd be interested in seeing like a side series, you know, of like a different quadrant. That could be super interesting.
Yeah. And I'm curious to know like what other quadrants they have aside from the wings and the writer's quadrant, I should say, and the scribe quadrant. Cause I feel like those are the only two that were really talked about.
I know they mentioned the healers. Then there's the infantry, but I feel like they always talk about the infantry. Like I just reread. So I audiobooked this over the summer, and then because I just can't control myself, apparently, and I buy books, I bought it because I pre-ordered the second book. And so I was like, well, if I have that physical copy of the second one, it's going to look weird on the shelf. I have to get a copy of the first one. So I did, and I started rereading it. And all of this is to say that I got to the part where they're I think, doing like the competition, and they see the infantry like camping in the middle of winter, and they're like, oh, well, at least they get a break. So I know that's a thing.
Yeah, I think I looked it up and it says riders, healers, scribes, and infantry. And then each quadrant is, it consists of three squads, flame, claw, and tail.
I feel like that's interesting though, because didn't they have some healers in the riders quadrant? Like, wasn't that what her brother did?
Yeah, because they just, well, riders had just so many injuries. So I think almost like healers practiced on them.
Yeah, but I think her brother was like a rider and a healer. Like, I think that was like, you know how they get like a power, if you will.
Yeah, you are right about that. I'm wondering, because the healers are like the powers, because they're talking, no. The menders are the powers. The healers are the ones who just use like herbs and stuff. So I'm wondering if, let's say you start in the Rider's Quadrant, you get your signet, you get your special power, and then is it once you get a special power, if you're like, oh, no, scratch that. Healers are different than menders. Brandon was a mender.
I think it's because, yeah, so I think it's exactly what you said, Leanne. It's, he was a rider, and then his like special gift from his dragon was that he also had a mending capability. But I think almost like exactly like you're saying, mending is more magical. Healing is more like learning about, it's like becoming a doctor, basically.
That makes sense.
Okay, kind of related. Which quadrant would you want to be in?
Oh, that's so hard. I want to say rider, but I want to say riders, but I feel like I'd die within like a day.
I'm kind of a wimp, so I definitely wouldn't want to be rider or infantry.
I feel like I'd be a rider or a scribe because I don't think I can deal with like people's injuries. So I feel like being a healer would not be in my wheelhouse.
I think I'd be a healer because I think I'd get too bored as a scribe. Like, I think just like the descriptions in the book of what the scribes were doing on a day to day would, I think, like kind of like infuriate me. I'd just be like, well, I just want to sit here and read all day, but you're not letting me. I also have to work. You know, like, there's no action.
I think, like, by default, I'd probably be a scribe, but I do see the healing be a little more interesting, like, learning about, like, how the different herbs and, like, magic, not magical, but, like, I guess kind of like what the Western medicine would call alternative medicine, but... I think that'd be super interesting, but also, like, I think about the reasons why I could say I could never be a doctor, a nurse, or a vet. Like, blood and gore is not my thing. Like, I don't pass out or anything. Like, I'm fine getting my blood drawn and getting shots. It's just, like, what if a rider, like, falls off a dragon, is really messed up and comes to you? Like, that would really kind of gross me out.
I wonder if that's just, like, the world, though. Like, you just get so used to it, like... It's just like, well, you know, like it would make someone queasy. But I mean, I feel like even the riders were like queasy because in the beginning when they were trying to go up the stairs, there were those that like watched others fall and they were just like throwing up kind of thing. So I wonder if it just like comes with the territory of like you are in a world that is death, like it's prominent with like death and stuff. But also, you haven't faced death until you get to this point in your career. And then you're just kind of like, well, that's a bummer. I think it is a bummer that you are like stuck in it for life, though, I will say.
Yeah, because I'm like, I can't imagine any older writers. I mean, I think they might have even made a comment about it. But I think it's just like when you can no longer keep up, you just die.
Unless you're lucky and you end up being like one of those professors at the school and they just transfer you because you're older and you're like still alive.
Yeah. Or maybe you become more like a general or something. I don't know. So what do you guys think about the whole the kids of the rebellion were marked sort of thing that they had going on?
I think that was like a good side story because I truly wonder like what the author's research was for this because I almost feel like she looked at historical wars, you know, and like saw that there was always someone helping the good side or whatever, you know, who was once considered bad, but they were good people, but they still had the stigma to them. Yeah. Cause I'm just thinking of like a lot, I'm just thinking of like wars where there were people who were like former freed slaves who were a part of like the militia, and they were helping the side of like, you know, the people who didn't want to see more bloodshed and stuff like that. So it's just kind of like, and you know, it was like a negative connotation, but they also were so brave and did such good, but it was like hard. I think there's like a lot of books about like just the perception of it all. And that's kind of how I saw this, or even like between the two world wars, people who maybe were on the side of the bad guys, you know, for lack of better terms, for the First World War, but then switched in the Second World War, or even like Germans who were a part of like the Allied forces. Is Allied forces the good one? I don't know enough. That's not the type of part of history that I subscribe to, but ask me anything about Tudor England, though. We can help.
I feel like it was interesting from a literary standpoint. Like, I think that it made the book interesting in that way. But I think it also, like, just personally made me, like, kind of sad, because I was like, you have these people who are seen as kind of, like, outcasts, where it's like they didn't really do anything wrong personally, you know? It was like they were just kind of born into a situation where they were on like the quote unquote losing side.
I think that kind of ties in the whole punishing children for what their parents did, and like kind of this assumption that they can't have independent thought and that they'll just automatically go along with whatever their parents' beliefs were, which I feel like in a lot of circumstances, maybe that does happen, but like to kind of automatically assume that they're bad just because of who their parents are and how that kind of literally marks them for the rest of their lives. Also how the whole, when I forget who the characters were, might've been Zayden or Liam, but they're talking about how, oh yeah, like they're conscripted, but Violet didn't know that they had to go into the Riders Quadrant. And it's kind of like, oh, like why the Riders Quadrant? And then they're like, maybe because it has the highest death rates, and they assumed it would be a way to kill them off without having to actually do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is dark to begin with.
Yeah.
What did you guys think about the characters? Like, did you have a favorite character or a least favorite character?
I know your least favorite character.
Ooh, who's your least favorite character, Kaylee?
I didn't like Dane, shocker. I feel like the way he was written just made it very hard for you to like him, because it seemed like he never thought that Violet could do anything on her own, and it seemed like he was always making decisions for her, like he wanted to be the knight in shining armor, and it just did not work out well. It was not great.
Yeah, Dane kind of like in my mind represented the patriarchy, and it's like, you know, as much as he was like, oh yeah, I know, I love you, sure, he was also just kind of like, yeah, but you need me. And the role of society is to, like, I'm protect you, like, not the other way around kind of thing. And it was just, yeah, which is a bummer, because at the beginning you were like, oh, this is the love interest.
I feel like it kind of reminded me of, you know, in A Court of Thorn and Roses, where you have that switch in the series. I feel like it was very much like that. I felt like I got a little catfished, and then it was like, that's not the love interest. Here's the actual love interest.
Oh, I felt majorly catfished in that series. Good grief. I was like shocked.
Okay, so I feel like my favorite summary of Dane was when we were texting about it, and Rihika, you said, your summary of Dane in this conversation was, Dane has I should be the main hero energy of a kid who watched too many fairy tales and didn't get the plot wasn't about the prince. And I just love that summary of him.
Agreed.
It's accurate.
Also, there's like this one scene at the sparring gym, I think. And then Zayden and Violet and Dane all get in this like thing. And Zayden says something to Dane like, oh, you choose like the most like convenient times to defend her and like inconvenient times not to. So it's kind of like Dane was like, oh, yeah, like I'm on your side, Violet, like blah, 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 blah. But then like other things, like with Amber, when Amber attacked Violet, and Dane's like, well, give me your memory so like I can know what happened rather than just believing her. So I feel like his actions and his words never really lined up in terms of fully supporting Violet, because he's like, oh, yeah, yeah, I support you, like you're my best friend. And then like Kaylee, you're saying he constantly does stuff to be like, I don't believe in your abilities.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think he's just such a controversial character. But honestly, I wonder if, like, I don't know, this book is so reminiscent of so many other books, like even with the whole Dane and Zayden thing, you know, with like the A Court of Thorns and Roses like dynamic. I just clearly the author is a reader. And she's read all the same books as us and thought, you know, what hasn't been done? Dragons. And then really dived in and did it well.
I love the dragon part, though. I love their personalities. I love the whole, like, you bond with a dragon. I think Andarna's adorable, and I would want her to be my dragon.
I was going to say, Andarna is my favorite character. Andarna's so spunky. And the twist of like finding out that like she could only get stronger from here is truly like wild to me.
I know, because there's the whole, oh, she's a feather tear or something. And it's like, oh, secretly she's a baby dragon, but we can't let anybody know because then they'll try to take advantage of them.
And the whole thing about like you could use up all their power and then the dragon dies. I was like, that's so crazy. I don't know. I thought it was very interesting. And I thought it was also interesting how that played into the book, where she was able to bond with two dragons, which I'm sure happened in part because one of them was just a little baby.
Also, the two things on the Andarna. One, I thought it was funny when Segael's like, I don't know, for some reason she like really likes Andarna and like took her under his wing. And then I just think it's funny how it's like these two super powerful dragons, Segael and Tarn. And then Segael's just like, I like this little baby one. I'm gonna make her my little, I don't know. She watches out for her, which I think is like adorable. And I really like that. Also, I never understood the whole like Jack Barlow's thing with like, oh, look at that freak golden dragon. Like we should go and like get rid of it. But I was like, wouldn't a golden dragon be like really cool? Like I get the whole argument of like, if you're going into battle, it kind of stands out. But like just on a like, if she's just chilling in a field, like I would think it's cool.
Yeah, I think part of it too is that she was small. And maybe, I think like in the book, the way I read it was like they saw it. I mean, one, they were just awful people who wanted to put other people down. But also like they were trying to like show off to the stronger dragons by being like, well, we'll kill this like really weak one. And then Tarn, who's who like everybody wanted, Tarn will like see how strong we are and then pick us instead.
Yeah, I think the whole thing with Jack Barlow, though, his character, I kind of had some issues with in the book. And I think that it's because there was never a motivation that I felt like was strong enough for him to do what he was doing. Like, I get the whole power hungry, want to appear super strong and like all of that stuff. Like, I get that. But it just seemed like a lot of his actions in the book happened to move the plot along rather than having a true motivation behind them.
Yeah, I think his character was very much the whole like, I want to be super strong and I'll do anything to show it, and like I need to take out all the weaklings. But I guess kind of to your point, and what maybe would have made it more satisfying as a reader is the like if there was more of a backstory behind him. I mean, I personally, I don't think I really cared. But because I was just like, I think I was just like so into it. I wasn't really like critically reading it from that lens. But I can totally see your argument of how it was just kind of like, okay, like you're super mad and you want to take out weak people. But like, what else is there to you as a person?
I agree. I think I also was not reading it super critically. I just read it kind of like this guy wanted to show off, like he wanted to be the best person there and thought the way to do it. Like he had this perception of what the writers were, and he thought what the writers were like putting people weaker down or like killing them off in order to get to where you needed to be. And that's what strength was. Another version of patriarchy in this book, Dane and Jack Barlow.
I think it's also because, like, just personally as a reader, I really like a morally gray villain. And so, like, I feel like he was not morally gray enough for me to be like, yeah, like, I can really get behind this character. But, I mean, I think the author's intention was not to make you be like, oh, I kind of like Jack Barlow. I think it was definitely to be like, this guy is a jerk. He is rude. He is power hungry and just,
We had a similar conversation when we were talking about Dane, and you were saying about how you wish there was like a little more to him or something like that. And I was just like, no, I was perfectly happy just hating on Dane.
Did you guys hate Dane from the beginning? Because I feel like I liked him until a certain point.
I think similarly at the beginning, you're like, oh, like she meets her childhood friend. This is so nice. And then I think some point, maybe like a third, halfway through, I was like, oh, that's not really a great way to talk to your friend, and it's getting a little annoying.
Yeah, I feel like at first, because he was helping her out and like taking her to the healer so that she could make sure that she was okay, and like I feel like at that point I liked him, but then when it started to be like more overbearing, or him telling her that she couldn't do things, that was kind of when I took issue with it, because I feel like other people are not, they shouldn't be allowed to tell you what you can and can't do. Only you can set limits as your own self.
I think also at the beginning, I was more willing to buy into his, oh, I'm just really concerned about her. Like, I want her to live. She's my childhood best friend. And at the very beginning, you're like, oh, yeah, like he really cares. He doesn't want her to get hurt. And then as she further progresses in the quadrant, at a certain point, you're like, okay, Dane, you can still have those thoughts. You can still care about her and not want her to die, but also, like, she kind of made a choice and you're just going to have to live with it.
And I feel like that whole bit about him only being there when it's convenient for him, that I think Ruhika had mentioned that earlier. I feel like that totally rings true because, for example, when she was doing her first matches on the mat, like, where was Dane then? You know what I mean? She was the one who had to figure out, like, oh, I have to poison these people if I want to do well and if I want to move up and not be seen as weak.
And that just made like when he betrayed her so much worse for me. That's kind of where I was just kind of like, why have you invested so much in this? But also part of, I think, why I liked him at the beginning was like, because she did want to like leave. Like she wanted to leave and go to the scribe quadrant, but he was like, he had it in his mind. It's exactly what happened with Jack Barlow and like what it means to be a writer. He had it in his mind, like, this is what a hero is. Like, she wants this. No change can happen. She wants this. I'm going to get it for her, kind of thing. But I felt so betrayed by Dane. It was insane. I felt the same way about a certain character in another book about fairies that I won't mention.
Okay. I think if we want to kind of keep on kind of framing this around a character discussion, we could talk about Violet's other like wing squad members. I feel like there's a range of personalities there. I guess if you talk about the first years, we have her bestie, Rhiannon.
All right. I was going to say, I just thought Rhiannon would go a whole nother way. I thought that was not going to end well. It's from the get-go, to be honest.
Well, I feel like in a book where literally a bunch of people die every morning, like they read off the rolls, I feel like I was a little concerned about like getting attached to Violet's friends because I'm just like, what if they just die?
Mm-hmm.
I agree. Like during the kid that died during like the showcase or whatever.
Yeah.
That got me. Yeah.
Or like, for example, Oren. Wasn't that her friend who died on the obstacle course?
No, he was the guy who tried to kill her.
Oh, just kidding. Who am I thinking of then?
I know who you're talking about. The guy who was like, he was the one who was something about like, his family was riders and he wanted to be a rider and he was doing this whole bravado thing and then like, he fell off the log. Also, Was that thing, the thing that they like, the obstacle course they have to run up? For some reason, I can't remember the name of it. But it gave me major Wipeout vibes.
Yes.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Same.
Like, because they were talking about the log they have to run across or something about, like, these bouncing balls they have to jump. And then, like, that wall at the end that they have to run up. I was like, this is totally just Wipeout.
I totally agree. Yeah.
A very dangerous Wipeout.
Which I always thought Wipeout was pretty dangerous because it's always, like, Wipeout was never, like, that one ultimate whatever ninja warrior type of show. It was, like, just average people. And maybe this was the start of their, like, hip problems for the rest of their life, you know?
Like, I mean, it's bad. You saw that, like, I specifically remember, like, the three, four giant bouncing ball things. And you'd see them, like, bounce off each one as they're, like, falling down. I mean, I don't know if I would do it.
I don't think I would do Wipeout.
Or at least, I don't know if I would do it on TV. Like, if you could rent it as a private thing for fun, I might do that.
Yeah, I'll go to one of your birthday parties at a Wipeout event.
Okay, I just remembered. It's called the Gauntlet. So we can all go and pretend we're going up the Gauntlet in Fourth Wing.
Honestly, that sounds like a great time.
Right?
I always wanted for a birthday party for it to be like a bookish themed birthday party and everyone has to come. It's like their favorite book character. And it's like all... like everything about it is themed to like a book or something. And it's just, that would be a great book club idea, but it has to be a book club for people who are very committed to the theme.
Okay. What do we think about Liam being all bodyguardy?
I wasn't opposed to it. I kind of was hoping he would end up the love interest.
I liked his character.
I did too.
I also liked how he whittled the little dragons to look like the other, like, rider's dragons. I thought that was so sweet.
I feel like he was just a big teddy bear. He looks really scary because she would say, like, he's one of the best people in our year. But then, like, he just seems like this really loyal friend who's just, like, looking out for his friend's best interests all the time. Like, I think if there was a word that could describe Liam, it would just be loyal.
Do you think it's like true loyalty though, or is it kind of like a version of Stockholm syndrome where it's like, this guy has done so much for me and, you know, he's treating me like a friend, I guess, like I have to return the favor in being extremely loyal.
I feel like it's true loyalty in this case. I don't think it's like a Stockholm syndrome. I think it's just kind of how Liam is.
I think also you can look at his relationship with Violet separate from his relationship with Zayden in a way, because there's that one scene where Violet was about to battle Jack on the mat and she was like talking to Liam and it's like, hey, I know you tell Zayden everything, and Liam's trying to be all like, no, I don't. And Violet's like, cut the crap. I know you report everything to him. But if there's just like one specific thing, if I specifically ask you not to tell him, like, are we friends or are you just like my bodyguard? And then Liam's like, we're friends. And he actually didn't tell Zayden that she was going to fight Jack. So I feel like there's something there in like their relationship that I feel like they actually were friends, even though they might have come together under like forced circumstances in a way.
I feel like that almost makes me more likely to, that makes me more likely to think that Liam is like kind of under this like innate sense of honor towards Zayden. And it's like that loyalty for Zayden stems from honor. The loyalty to Violet stems from like actual friendship. But you're right. That I think is like a good example of how he strayed. Who knows? I loved him. But I also like that, you know, it ended up being that he was a platonic friendship. Like, I appreciated that.
I will say, though, when he died, I was devastated. I was so sad. I was like, this cannot happen.
I'm convinced he's not dead. I'm convinced he's still alive. We're about to find out in book two.
So this is kind of like when I reread Harry Potter and Fred and George are still alive and I just read it. And in my head, I'm like, even though I've read this a million times, this time I read it, Fred's not going to die. Like, that's kind of how I feel when I started rereading Fourth Wing. I was like, Liam's not going to die this time. Like, no, he's fine.
Mm-hmm. But, okay, did you guys have a suspicion from the beginning that Brennan was still alive? Because I totally did.
No, but I'm not really good at predicting stuff in books. I feel like I just get so into the story that I don't necessarily predict things. I'm not surprised, though. Was there anything in the book that made you think he was still alive? Or was it just kind of like a, I've read a bunch of books and it's like one of those twists that's supposed to be a twist, but you can see it coming?
It's just there had been too many deaths. There had been too many deaths. He was too important to the plot for book one to kill him off.
Yeah, I think you're right in that there was like too many deaths. And then also the fact that they kept bringing him up, like, they wouldn't have kept bringing him up if he wasn't going to come back. I feel like her father, they talked about him like two times and that was it. Whereas they talked about Brennan like seven different times. And I was like, Brennan is totally coming back. Brennan is not dead. And then at the end when they were like, do we take her to wherever the place was? And they were like, I don't know. Should we take her there? I was like, Brennan's totally alive and he's totally there. I was like, this is what's going to happen.
Yeah. Okay. Any opinions on Signets? What would you like? What would you want to be able to do?
I think Violet's is a really bad Signet, in my opinion. I think she kind of, like, it's a good one. Sure, she has one.
I kind of agree with Ruhika that I feel like Violet's Signet was a little bit of a letdown. Like, I don't know what I was hoping for, but it wasn't that. I also think it's interesting that they would go and kill anybody who had the Signet to read minds. And I'm like, partially wondering if it was to put them out of their own misery or wondering if it was like, because then you'll know everybody's secrets. Probably a little bit of both.
Because they killed that one guy who was running down the hill when he manifested his Signet. I think based on that one guy's reaction, it might be a little bit of both because it's like that guy seemed like he was going to be a mess. And also assuming, let's say they let him live and he could eventually like control it. I think they mentioned it in the book too, is that it's just a security risk because if he can read everyone's minds and he gets captured, they can basically like try to get any sort of secret about the other side from him.
Yeah, but then they let Dane live. You know what I mean? Like,
I think the difference is Dane has to touch the person.
Yeah, but I think that's why, I don't know. Maybe I just like officially just don't like Dane. And now I'm just upset with who he is, his fictional self. But yeah, I don't know. I think like Dane's whole shtick of like, I don't know. Cause like they must have known right away, like early on. So it's a matter of like what happened from there. Like you have to test it somehow. And if it really is about like keeping secrets, he could have very easily kept it to himself, although that doesn't seem on brand for his character.
And it also makes me wonder, do you think that anybody had the Signet to read minds in the past and they would have faked it to be like what Dane has, where it's like only in certain circumstances can I read your mind, but they can actually read it all the time? Because I was like half curious to see if something like that would happen to Violet and then she would have to hide it.
I think it depends because we don't know that much about it. Like if you're constantly like that guy who had it and you're running down the hill just yelling everyone's thoughts out loud, then you probably couldn't hide it. But I'm sure there's probably people who, right? Because if you knew that you're going to get killed for that Signet, if you had any ability to control it, you wouldn't want people to know you had it.
And then do you think that Violet's going to manifest like a second, I would say more like developed Signet when, what's the dragon's name? Andarna, when she becomes older? Because I know like right now she has the whole time stopping thing, but you have to be careful because otherwise it could like drain her of all of her life, I guess. So I'm curious to know if that Signet is going to stay or if it's going to develop into something different as Andarna gets older, or if there's not going to be a second Signet.
Maybe it just gets stronger, like she can do it more. I was going to say, I'm just wondering if in the second book, Andarna finally like matures and we get to see what her and her full self is.
Yeah, because my understanding is that Violet's time-stopping thing is that that's Andarna's full power. And the way they were trying to differentiate it in the book was like a signet is a mix of the dragon's power and the rider's individual like personality. So, I mean, I don't know anything, but my assumption is that when Andarna matures, that something will change. I just don't know what or how.
Was there anything else that you guys wanted to cover about the book?
No, I like this book is one of those things where I feel like it was just so good that it just, it's almost like in my mind, it's like a really good day kind of thing. Like I'm not remembering necessarily specific details. I'm just remembering the feeling that I had while reading it. And it's just like, I was gripped. I was gripped from the beginning. And I think, yeah, like I felt that way about a couple of books. I remember as a kid, I felt that way about the Divergent series. I remember sitting in class and like just being hooked. And it kind of gave me that same like feeling of like, oh gosh, what's going to happen? I'm invested. They're all so chaotic. And yeah, it just, I really liked it. I'm excited for the next book, November 7th, right? And then Leanne just tells me that there's going to be like four more. So that's good.
Yeah, I think the thing that kind of lets me down on that is there's no dates on the rest of the series, which I feel like we were talking about this before. I don't know if it was on or off air, but it makes me think that what Rahiko was saying about how sometimes authors write like a really, really long book and then the publisher is like, we got to split this in two, is I'm wondering if the first and second book were written as part of like one longer narrative and that's why they're coming out in such quick succession. And that's why we also have to wait longer for the third book.
I agree. I think that is probably what happened. Or she like, in order to sell it, she was just like, well, I already, or you know what I mean? Like, cause when your first book comes out, you have to do all this stuff to like get the agent, the publisher, all of that stuff. But then by that point, she's probably already having written like half the second book, you know? So maybe it's also like by the time a publisher got a hold of it, she'd already for the most part written the second book. And she was just like, well, you know, you like it so much, I can give you like five more books, so sure.
But it is wild that this came out in what, May? And there's already another within the same calendar year? I'm not upset at all, but I was like, that is a real fast turn. I mean, I feel like it's probably like the publishers are like, oh, this is so big, let's get the other one out now while the buzz is still nice and high. I don't know. I'm not in publishing.
I love learning about the secrets of the publishing world.
Rahika, I feel like if you wrote a book, it'd be very good because I feel like you're very well spoken. So if you ever decide to read a book and or write a book and you need a beta reader, let me know. I'll read it.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe I should just say this out loud to hold myself accountable. My goal is to finish what I've been working on for like 5 years and all through law school when I sat next to Leanne and would just be typing and not paying attention.
Were you working on a book then?
Oh, I've been working on a book like all of law school, which is, but I'm like debating between middle grade and YA at the moment and like where I want to start. Because it could go either way, but reading books like this make me think like, oh, YA or something, you know, why not just jump right in? But adults are mean, but then so are children. So what to do? But no, I'm taking, I have like a gap between February and August, and I'm just going to be writing during that time is my plan. So fingers crossed, you guys are the first ones that I've told. So we'll see how that goes for me. But
that's so exciting.
You know, fingers crossed. And then maybe I don't have to be a lawyer after all. This is good. This holds me accountable to sending you guys something within next year. So that's good. Yeah, we need accountability in our lives. Fingers crossed.
Should we close it out with who would you recommend this to as the ideal reader audience?
Ooh. I think I'd recommend it to who I said up top. So the kids that grew up with like Dragonology and Aragon and everything, and then like just were really into dragons for a while. But then like, you know, they grew up, they still want that kind of like vibe to it all, but they also really loved A Court of Thorns and Roses or like the Cruel Prince series. And they were like, that's my current genre. I think it's, I would not recommend this, I now know, to people who are in the military. So thank you, Kaylee's boyfriend, for alerting me of that. And I would not recommend it to my elder relatives, even though I already have. And that was a worst case scenario. Yeah. Honestly, yeah, I'd recommend it to a lot of people. Dark Academia, if you like books like, you know, A Deadly Education, A Court of Thorns and Roses, even like Hunger Games Divergent, this is definitely the book for you.
Yeah, I think I'd recommend it to people who don't read a ton of fantasy, because I don't really read a ton of fantasy, and I feel like this is the first one written for adults that I've gotten into. I think also you have to be someone who's looking to just kind of more of like your escapism read. As I mentioned earlier, I didn't really read this with a critical lens. I was just having a great time. So I'm sure if you are reading it with a critical lens, or if you've read a ton of fantasy and you're really trying to like dig in on it, you could probably find more flaws in it, which may affect your reading experience or whatever. But yeah, if you were like reading Harry Potter and Aragorn as a kid, here's your adult Harry Potter and Aragorn in one book.
I agree. I think I'd recommend it to people who are looking for a bingeable read in their 20s and older. I think that would be like the target thing that I would recommend it for. And even people who are like, I used to like fantasy, but I'm not sure about it now. Or people who are in a reading slump, I think this would be a good thing to kind of get you back into it.
Thank you for joining us. Our next book club is Such a Fun Age by Kylie Reed, and that will be dropping on February 5th.
Bye, guys. Thanks for having me.
We hope you enjoyed our Fourth Wing discussion. We'd love to hear your thoughts. So you can send them to zillennialspodcast@gmail.com or DM us on Instagram @zillennialspodcast. Tune in the future. There's probably going to be many more episodes on this series. Thanks for listening.